You know, I love community health assessment and improvement planning work, but sometimes I have no relationships to disclose. Sometimes the challenge is in the details on these things. At the end of the session, we're going to be able to talk about the steps in improvement planning processes, some of the challenges for data sharing and strategies. But we will also add that challenges and strategies for collaboration and actually making these things become active in your community, these plans. So from here, we're going to go through this overview piece, a wonderful story of a community that's done some great things, and then a facilitated discussion. So the semantics around this, community health assessments, CHAs we'll be calling them, community health needs assessments, CHNAs. The big difference there is that generally public health is doing CHAs, nonprofit hospitals are doing CHNAs. The language of CHNAs is actually in the Affordable Care Act. So that's how it's said in Section 9007. So we will be using that that language. Then we've got CHIPS, Community Health Improvement Plans, which is what is used on the public health side. And as I understand it, on the nonprofit hospital side, the implementation plan is often called the community benefit plan. Sometimes. The other distinction that's important to make is the difference between planning and processes. Sometimes what's more important than what your plan said is the process that you use to get there. If your process was inclusive, if the community is engaged all the way along, you have a community that's much more willing and able to work on the implementation cycle and is willing to stay engaged until you come back around to the next assessment cycle. One of the things we've learned at NACHO is the importance of those being continuous cycles rather than, well, now we're going to stop for a year or two and then we pick back up, because when you do that, you lose so many partners that you had with you. So the idea of keeping these things continuous is very important. It's also, of course, under challenges, staff time intensive. I mean, keeping people collaborating and working together does take time. And it takes somebody paying attention, or you start to lose people and lose energy and focus. She has some definitions here, that the process is an ongoing, collaborative, community-wide effort to identify and address health problems through coordinated activities, and that there are many different kinds of groups that would be involved in those processes. Some of the common elements in community health improvement processes would be preparing and planning, engaging the community, developing a goal or a vision, conducting the assessment, prioritizing, developing the improvement plan, and then that tricky stage in there where you identify who does what and start implementing that plan. And, you know, that's a real fun time for partners, because if you do it creatively, each person can go away with the same goal and their work towards the community's meeting of that goal. And then evaluating and monitoring the outcomes, which is sometimes a challenge in getting local data to do that. There are some traditional models that have been used in the past. This is kind of a laundry list of some of the big names. One we used in Tennessee was called a community diagnosis process. I actually really like that because it helps one conceptualize what we're really trying to do. In a way, we're thinking about the community as the patient and the community as what needs healing. So if you look at a picture of urban blight, you know, and you see trash and broken glass on an empty lot, and you see people trying to walk down sidewalks that are too narrow or non-existent and catch the bus, and it's going to take them 2 hours to get to work, that's a community-wide sign of disease in your area. And the idea is to work towards health to that community, and that will influence the health and the context in which every person in your community lives. So here's a long definition of community health assessment. We talk about this a lot at NACHO, what is really involved here. It's a chance to think about it, again, upstream. It's more than just looking at the health outcomes, but it is part of a community health assessment. It's definitely looking at health outcomes from many different lenses. You know, you need some different data sources to see what your health outcomes are. The common steps include developing the plan, defining the population, which in this era of combined CHAWS and CHNAs can be really interesting, and then identifying the indicators that align with your community's goals. And what's interesting here is that this is a chance to engage your community, not just, you know, not just in identifying what they see as the problems, but what they see as the vision and where they want the community to go, and what they see as the indicators that would help them know that the community is getting there. So if you can engage the community in that kind of dialogue where they're helping to think about the measures and they're helping to construct this vision, in particular how they would see it happening and what they would see as markers that they were making progress, then there's a chance to build social cohesion in your community, a chance to begin to build a sense of trust that, yes, we know what we're talking about. We've talked about it, and they've heard me, and I've heard them, and we're moving together towards a goal. A community health improvement plan, and a lot less work has been done on this end, on the CHIP end, than has been done on the CHAW end. But the community health improvement plan is a long-term, systematic effort to address issues identified by the assessment and community health improvement process. So you have this process where you've done your assessment work, you're figuring out what it is that you want to do about it, and then you put it into a plan. It sounds like semantics, but these are really important to keep separate. You want to make sure that your process has integrity with your vision and is aligning with the direction that you want to go in. And then you want to develop a plan in accordance with that process. So there are many, many steps to developing and implementing a community health improvement plan. And I would also say here that, you know, this one is much less carved in stone even than the community health assessment. I think the community health assessment gets to be a little bit, well, we looked at this data and we're going to go back and look at that in a year or two. But the improvement plan, that can be redone as you start to see, well, yeah, this is working, well, yeah, that's working, but we needed to bring in this organization. So it becomes sort of a living document, or could become that. And the challenges, I think that we will not take comments on that yet, and we'll wait and hear your presentations and then take comments on that. Okay. And thank you for your attention. Thank you for being here this morning.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for being here. Tim and I have done the, I want to make sure I get this right. Are we doing it right? Oh, yeah, I have no relationship to disclose. Oh, no. So now I have no relationships to disclose. Okay. So we're going to move around a little bit, and just tell us if you can't hear us. We've gone through our community health assessment, and we're in the improvement plan phase. And we'll tell you why we did it. So we have, as a hospital, we have a community mission to serve the greater community. We fulfill all of our community benefit needs, and that's a technical term that we have to give something back to the community as a community hospital. But we try to focus on the most significant issues in the community. That's important to us. We need to provide better access to care and reduce health care costs. So it's because of new IRS regulation and public health care accreditation rules that we're doing this, but we are already committed to the community before we got started with our work.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to start with, that the Norwalk Hospital and Norwalk Health Department have worked together for a long time, long before Mary and I got there. As a matter of fact, in the year 2000, we completed a community health assessment, and at that time, there weren't any requirements that we do this, but the administration at both the city and at the hospital thought it was the right move to make for the city. At that time, it was 2000, we said, all right, we'll come back in 5 years and take another look. And we got to 212 and said, well, now there's a good time, now that we should definitely do this. So we've worked together a lot, and so it just made sense, you know. So to get there, you know, I called Dan DeBarber, who's the CEO. Now, when I made the call, I knew that Dan wasn't going to get involved in community health assessment, but he was the person to start with, and fortunately for us, he directed the project to Mary, and from that point, we just took off, and I think it's worked pretty good.
So when you guys asked the question, how did we get started, it was history, but also just picking up the phone and making the phone call, and it was as easy as that. I don't know if any of you have had difficulty in that, engaging your hospital, but if you can find the right person inside, it's pretty easy to do.
Is your community a single hospital?
Yes.
Well,
for the most part.
Well.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. Physically located in the community, Norwalk Hospital,
yeah.
Yes.
So here you go. We'll tell you about
we'll
that.
Talk
so,
to you about that.
The hospital serves 7 towns. We've got, you know, 328 beds, 500 physicians, 400 volunteers, something like 1,700, 2,000 employees. We serve 7 towns. Norwalk is the big hospital within the 7 towns, but we serve those, that's our primary service area. We also reach into Westchester County and New Haven County, and there are 5 other hospitals in our catchment area. So our service areas overlap with the service areas of other hospitals, and then from Tim's perspective, it's his city, but he interacts with all the other area public health departments in Connecticut. I don't know where you guys are from.
Connecticut
pretty
is
parochial.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
There are 169 towns in the state of Connecticut. There are 72 local health departments. So Norwalk is the city with about 85,000 people, and our health department pretty much serves Norwalk. We do go outside and do some other things, especially for the smaller towns around us where they just don't have the capabilities that our health department has. So we have a 6-member board of health. They're an advisory group. I report to the mayor and to the administration. They're probably the best advisory group I've ever worked with. They're the consummate professionals. They offer very sound advice. We employ about 33 people total, and that number varies depending upon the day and the week. And as I think was mentioned earlier, we're into environmental health, so inspection services, some preventable diseases, health education and promotion, which is probably the largest growing part of our department right now. And we also have a small laboratory that supports our clinical programs, does some water testing, and we're a coastal town, which is something we'll probably hit on. And emergency preparedness, the latest thing.
And think about what Tim just said. So 70-something public health directors, 30 hospitals now, about 28 hospitals in the state of Connecticut. So lots of overlap between the health departments, the hospitals, so a lot of that. So we decided to take the broadest possible swath. So we talked to all the health directors in the other towns, said, you know, are you willing to work? Everybody said yes. So we covered the gamut because that made our work easier and everybody could fulfill whatever requirements they needed to. We talked to some of the other hospitals, and what's interesting is each of the hospitals kind of wanted to do their own thing, but as we've moved into the improvement plan phase, we're doing a lot of collaboration.
So this is just a map.
Yeah.
Long Island Sound is down here, and New York is over here and down here. So we're in lower Fairfield County, is Norwalk is about 40 miles, 50 miles from New York City.
Yeah.
And for the most part, we're a bedroom community to New York, a lot of commuting, and especially from the suburban towns around us.
Great poverty and great wealth, huge
yep.
disparities.
So the purpose and scope was to assess the current state of the community, recognize our health assets and strength. We have a lot of good things going on in the greater Norwalk area. It's a very desirable place for people to live. And so we wanted to emphasize that this wasn't all about needs, that we really wanted to celebrate some of the good things that we do. And as we went through, we found that when we looked at Healthy People 2020 goals and the rest of the state of Connecticut, for the most part, we're above all of that. So there are good things happening. But we knew there would be some priorities, some places where we could definitely improve, and we wanted to identify them and then get that into our community health improvement plan and move it forward.
Okay. So one of the things that we did was we put together this task force, and originally, Tim, I forget the numbers, we started out with like 40 people from 30 organizations, yeah. and that's grown over time to something like 200 people in more organizations. And the way we set it up, because we know how these things work in our community, is that we have projects that have gone on and on and on, like the train, the song that never ends. And we said to everybody, we're going to have a start time, a middle, and a finish. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to ask you to come to 3 meetings a year. We're going to ask you to join a task force when we get to our improvement part of it. We're going to ask you to help find us people to participate in the process, either by providing data or giving us, you know, people for focus groups for the qualitative part of the process. But we gave them a very specific job description. Here's your role as a task force member. And they all came because they knew they were going to get something out of it at the end. They were going to be able to participate, but it was a limited thing. It wasn't another committee that was going to go on and on forever. So what else am I missing there?
That's it. Okay, so health equity, and we heard this coming, the theme of health equity came up numerous times in our focus groups, and we heard it from healthcare providers and social service providers and business people, that there are a lot more things that impact somebody's health than what is done in a doctor's office or in a hospital, where they come from, their educational level, their income, and the place that they live certainly has an impact. And we made sure that as we went through the process and collected the data, that we did include those type of descriptors of our community. And I think a good example is obesity. So when we looked at the numbers across the board, if you include all of the towns, the obesity levels are pretty low, especially among children. Actually, in the suburban communities, we have the other extreme, where bulimia is a problem. But we know in Norwalk, and we've been tracking in Norwalk obesity by looking at the BMI on children at 3 different grade levels. So entry into the school system, sixth grade when they get to fifth grade.
Right.
And at ninth grade. So we know that in Norwalk, 1 in 3 children are either overweight or at risk of being overweight. So what affects that? You know, there are multiple things. The hospital, Pepperidge Farms, which is ironically Pepperidge Farms, people that make those great cookies, it was very interested in working with us on addressing obesity. And their headquarters, they're actually,
local.
Pepperidge is owned by Campbell's, but the Pepperidge operation is headquartered in Norwalk. And the hospital got involved. So why don't you tell them about the process?
So we're kind of going back and forth between the data collection and how we utilize it. But somebody asked the question, how do you put it in place? So while we were sort of in our data collection, this other project came along that, you know, we knew obesity was an issue and healthy living was an issue. And so we started a project called LEAN, and I can't remember what LEAN stands for, learning, education, something.
Activity, nutrition.
So we decided to test a little bit of the hypothesis that, you know, education, that there were some through the interview process and so forth that said, you know, people would eat more healthy food, but it's not available. And we said, Well, it really is available, but it's more that people, you know, the other side of it was it's more that people don't know what they should be eating or they don't think about it. So we got involved with the health department, the hospital, Pepperidge Farm, and they used to come to the meetings with Mint Milanos, and we said, you can't do that anymore. but we got together and we engaged one of our local school systems, the most diverse school in our area, and we put together this project to test. And Tim and his department were already gathering BMI, but we decided to do it 3 times a year with this particular population. We started with second graders. So the project is about teaching the kids in class with a nutritionist from the hospital about nutrition. They all used to come to school with we call them their O's in the bag, their Doritos, their Fritos, their Cheetos, whatever those awful snacks are that you eat that end in O's. And the nutritionist taught them over the course of the year, grapes, you know, carrots, whatever, taught them about nutrition and healthy eating. There was a lot of pester power that went on. The kids went home and pressured their parents to give them bananas instead of the O's in their lunch boxes. There was economic lessons involved. It's a little bit less expensive to buy some fruit than it is to buy all the O snacks. We brought the parents in and had cooking classes with Chef Jeff from the hospital and, you know, taught the parents how to cook. They got a free meal, so they came. The health department put together this fabulous before school boot camp program. So we got some of the teachers engaged in coming to school early on, and the kids would warm up before school. And these are kids, most of these kids in the school had free or reduced lunches. So they came because they got breakfast as part of it. So we have boot camp, now we have nutrition, we have some pester power with the parents, and the body mass. So the CDC rates for BMI for these kids were here, and our rates now are here. And we've added, we've gone to third and fourth grade, we've added all the grades in the school now, and the trend continues to go down. And the kids are pressuring their parents into better healthy meals at home. And so the whole family is coming together. And one sidebar to this, because we never planned on it, wasn't part of the project, is that the teachers are telling us that the kids are more awake and alert in school because they're doing the boot camp in the morning and having a healthy breakfast, and their grades are better. So it goes from the data collection and the hypothesis and using that data and trying to figure out what to do in the improvement plan. So we've kind of added that into our obesity healthy living improvement plan, and it went to another school this year. So
the bottom line here, what we found is that education works. So if you educate children on proper nutrition and then you arm them with that annoying pester power, that they bring that message home to mom and dad, it actually can work. So the bottom line, I think, is, you know, educating our population on the nutritional value, and then in the long run, you know, as these children learn better, they're going to be better educated, they'll get better jobs, and move out of the cycle that they're in. So
these programs you mentioned, are they year-long?
Yeah.
Oh, well, they run in cycles. So we do it for a period of time, and then...
Well, did the Lean program?
The Lean is...
goes from the start of school to the end of school.
Yeah. And is your school system a year-long school system, or do you have a summer break?
We have a summer break.
Yeah. We talked about the summer program, and we don't have the funding. I think we did it the first year, but we didn't do it again after the first year. But the kids have journals that they bring home and write in their journals and come back to school with their journals. Now that we have the whole school on the platform, all the teachers are engaged. So that's been a positive trend. If you could do the summer, if you could afford to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, because you have the build up, and then you have that drop-off point. Education. Whatever your
One of the things a lot of kids go to camps during the summer, so the health department is working with some nutrition and fitness programs into the camps during the summer, so we'll pick up some of those.
And they've got a garden going now at the school, and the kids get to take the stuff home, and they get to eat it during school, so that...
Is summer feeding program the health department oversees?
We don't oversee them, but there are summer feeding programs, yes. So.
Okay.
Okay, so key themes that came out of our assessment, certainly, and one of the, when we got the findings, we brought our group back together and sat down and worked through this. So mental health was found to be a priority.
Yep.
Obesity, substance abuse, chronic disease, health literacy. And, you know, as Mary is fond of saying,
we can't boil the ocean. We said we can't do all this. There's just no way. So we decided, funny, we're the hospital, and we decided to take the chronic disease, so cardio, cancer, diabetes. The hospital was already brewing some programs in that realm and had worked with the health department in the past, but was really working on the readmission stuff that the hospitals are all working on right now. So we don't need to reinvent that wheel. We're already doing it. We decided to focus on mental health, substance abuse, and obesity / healthy living, healthy lifestyle, because we have that problem where in the burbs it's one thing and in the city it's the polar opposite. But we learned a lot. I mean, mental health and substance abuse is huge throughout our region, and it's a whole variety of factors. I mean, if we talk about the data analysis, it was very interesting learning. I mean, we have everything from, you know, we have some gangs in the city, and in the suburbs we have very, very wealthy kids who have a lot of money, who sometimes are not supervised well and get into everything, including the emerging drugs like bath salts. So there's everything from that to isolated elderly folks who are very wealthy, who are abusing alcohol in their homes. They're not driving, they're having liquor delivered to their homes. So we have the whole gamut of issues along that front. And mental health is a huge issue in our area too. And we have found nationally those are big issues across the board, mental health, substance abuse, and obesity. So we decided to move forward with those three initially. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. When you initially did the community health assessment and decided you were going to collect data, before you prioritized the things that you did, the reasons you said, what informed sort of the scope of the data collection? How did you know what kind of data you were going to collect?
So we have the task force.
And we had a consultant help us with that too.
Oh, and we used the ACHI framework,
So we were using the ACHI framework, and we brought in a consultant
initially.
Yeah, and they kind of helped guide it, and then we put them to the task of, you know, what's out there, what can we get, and we'll talk about that a little bit later and some of the challenges. But it was fairly challenging. So we wound up looking at census data, behavioral risk factor surveys,
CDC,
some stuff that the state health department had available.
But we'll tell you, we've evolved. We'll tell you more about data collection.
Well, and just one other related question.
Sure.
That's correct.
That's okay.
Because, as you said, place is so important, and we increasingly know more about place, how do you collect local area data, like neighborhood level data?
Very difficult.
It's hard
very
to get.
Difficult. We got almost all of that came qualitatively through focus groups, interviews with key informants. We engaged the churches and, you know, the day laborers.
Community health center.
Doesn't exist.
We have a community health center in Norwalk, and certainly, so they're able to generate some information. But that was a hard thing for us to do.
Is it one hospital, or is it a particular project? Do you have
You know, we deliberately chose, we looked at demographic data, but we deliberately said, this isn't going to be a marketing project. This
not is, for marketing, but, you know, because we're doing a lot of 14 hospitals in our area.
Yes.
They all have, some have more data available than others based on budget, but they're able to, they know who they want to market to, who they don't, but not using it for that reason.
Right.
But using those data to help get a profile of their zip code area, their service area.
Right.
And so we're looking at that too. I mean, it's not as, you know, you don't look at trouble.
It's not as robust.
You are getting
Doesn't your state hospital association have CHIME data, have the data across all the hospitals?
Yeah, we do. And then we have the today marketing section. We're teaching things.
We looked at everything. We looked at all of our data, but we worked so conscientious about playing it without marketing it, and a lot of the hospitals are marketing it.
Right.
A lot of the hospitals are doing it to check off the box.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we set some priorities, and then
our task force identified these three at the top that were our primary three, and we've collapsed them into two. So we have mental health and substance abuse, and then obesity, healthy living, because there was so much overlap in the organizations that impact mental health, even though mental health is completely different from substance abuse. The same organizations, at least in our catchment area, for the most part, worked those two, and we couldn't imagine bringing them together to talk about this and then bringing them together to talk about this, so we collapsed them into one. And we used the task force to help guide us in the scope and breadth of what we wanted to do.
So we brought the findings to the task force. We asked them to help us set some priorities, and then we sent that information back out to everybody who had ever participated. So, you know, getting people to attend every meeting was a little bit challenging, but we knew we had 200 plus people that had participated in some way, either in a focus group, or they were a key informant in an interview, or they came to the meeting. So to just keep them in the loop, once we set these priorities, we sent them back out to that listserv and said, here's what we found, here's where we're thinking about going. What do you think about that? And we got some pretty positive feedback.
Good question. So we did have a process with some counties in our service area, and actually came up with a very similar list of the top priorities. And had some discussion, you end up with these very large buckets. So mental health could mean so many different things,
right.
Different populations. Did you have any sort of discussions about whether, and we ended up
So that was a challenge. We had a lot of debate, and one of the things that I think Tim and I did, just because it's how we work, I don't know whether right, wrong, good, or bad, we said everything can't be an open-ended question. Because if we said to the top 200 people, what do you want to do?
We'd still be there.
We'd still be there.
Right.
We said, this is what we found, and this is what we think that means. Do you all agree? And then if so, or we tweak it a little bit, this is what we think maybe we could do. What do you think? But if we didn't say that this is maybe what we think we can do, we would...
Yeah, it was important, I think, to guide people along.
So we set that up as ground rules. We would guide.
But we certainly were respectful of the information we found. We didn't come into it with a preconceived notion that here's where we're going to go with this. We did an assessment, came up with some findings, and said, well, you know, this looks like we should be going in this direction. And then I think we'll talk about a little bit more of how we got even drilled down further to do the improvement plan. Just on a more broadly, the challenges to doing this project, costly. We spent a lot of money on a consultant, and it was worthwhile, but there's certainly a cost to that. And I think we made a commitment in the beginning, like the health department needed this because we're applying for accreditation. The hospital needed it to satisfy the IRS. And there are various ways to do it. I mean, we know some of the hospitals in Connecticut are just doing the minimal amount, I think some are even considering taking the hit on the fine. But we made a conscious decision to try and do a good project that we could really use to move the community forward. So that in itself made it costly and time-consuming. We found that there's, as we just mentioned, the availability of local quantitative data is kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to improve.
Yeah.
Our successes, we definitely identified some community strengths and needs. I think we better understand the local data that's there. And our partnership has definitely been strengthened. I mean, as I said at the outset, hospital and health department in Norwalk worked together great over a long period of time. And from this, we've been able to draw in those other health departments. And, you know, they're coming along little by little, and we'll get them there. And then our community partners are, I think, much more active.
Yeah, and you'll see, we'll talk in a minute about the more about the CHIP, but a lot of silos have been broken down across all these agencies that we've involved in there, and they've made so much progress in a short amount of time. We'll talk about that.
So,
are your health departments accredited?
At this time, no. Norwalk is the first to apply, so we're in the process now. There are several, though, that are moving.
So just the timing, just to show you, it's taken some time, but we're getting there. We're on track. We're, at this point, you know, implementing the CHIP. Let's skip to the next one, Tim.
Sure. Okay.
So this is sort of a little bit more of what we're doing. So our goal was to improve community health. You know, the task force came to the sort of goal statement, and you see some objectives here. And I'm just going to tell you about the initiatives. So they, to your point, we keep saying we can't boil the ocean. So we picked two distinct projects to work on. One was to develop a regional resource guide. Now our 211 under United Way had a resource guide out of date, not kept up, blah, blah, blah. So our group said, we're going to improve this. We're all going to work together. We're going to improve this, and we're going to make sure it stays up to date so that individuals, family members, community members, providers, so forth, could utilize it, and it would be up to date all the time. So we're working with United Way now to take on the expanded access to that to make sure that it stays up to date. And United Way has been a great partner. In fact, we just got notice that they're going to give us some money for this other project, the community care team. So
this is interesting.
Yeah.
Tell them the statistics about the users. So, was it 30? How many people generated all those visits to the ED?
Oh, so the substance abuse and mental health side of the project, we decided that we were going to, and we looked all across the country, across the state, and we put together a model that includes a community care team. And the community care team are a group of providers who come together, and they agree to keep client privacy, client information private. They come together once a week. Ours launches on November 15th, but we've had a mock trial and we have another one next week. They come together on a weekly basis. They talk about a list of clients who are prioritized from the most needy to the least needy, and they work to provide instantaneous services to these individuals with three goals. The first goal being to improve the quality of health of these individuals with substance abuse and mental health. The second is to improve the client experience, and the third is to reduce costs in the emergency department. So we did an analysis of the hospital's most frequent utilizers of the emergency department, and 35 individuals were in the hospital 1,100 times last year in the emergency department. And the same 35 people were also hospitalized collectively the same number, 1,100 times. So this is additive. 35 people in the hospital, either in the emergency department or inpatient, 2,200 times. So imagine the cost. So imagine if you could wrap services around 100 individuals who utilize the emergency department by bringing all the different providers together to talk about them. Imagine how much better these people's lives would be and how much less they would use the emergency department. Because they're just coming to the ED, either the police are dropping them off at the ED, or they're showing up in there because they're in pain, they may be drug seeking, they have all sorts of other issues. So that's the project, is the community care team reducing costs, improving the client experience, and improving the quality of care that these individuals get.
And I think this project has really captured the attention of a lot of people. So certainly the social service providers kind of bought into this. And the amazing thing was Mary headed up a committee of social service providers. And when they first came to the room, many of them didn't know what the other people were doing. So we got to square one there.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when you start talking savings of,
$500,000 is anticipated.
The hospital administration takes a real keen look at that because, you know, it's a competitive environment.
And if you're health, if you're public health directors and you want to figure out how to engage your hospital, go to the dollars.
Yeah.
Because all the hospitals are hurting right now. So that's the way to get in there.
Great committee and great intervention. Just was wondering if how that matched up to the requirements around implementation according to your CHNA. If it was, you know, I know there are some IRS requirements around it not being that of the community benefit as opposed to the
hospital
benefit. And not that
that's not, you know. Yeah, it's a huge community benefit because a lot of people are also homeless.
Right.
And the providers have been pulling out their hair trying to figure out how to get these people out of the shelters. The police are trying to figure out what to do. They just drop them off at the hospital. They're trying to figure out what to do with them. So it's the providers are more excited about it than anybody. And when we did this first mock trial, we asked everybody to bring together a client with no name and talk about the client. And the first meeting, you know, Jimmy said, oh, well, I could provide this for that person. And Joe said, oh, I could do this. And they started talking, and they knew who they were talking about. Even though there was no name attached, they knew who they were talking about. But they never knew that they provided these things that could help the client. And they walked away from that meeting and help the client. So it's really a huge benefit to the community because these people have oftentimes a negative impact on the community, but these people can't get the help they need either because the providers weren't talking to each other. So we've looked at the requirements and we believe this project totally fits.
So it depends
on
any process or have action that the hospitals clean up some of that savings to help with
not so much from the community benefit dollars, but we've gotten commitments from agencies within the city. So the Norwalk Housing Authority has made available a certain number of units.
Well, five first, and then we got 15 more, so we've got 20, which doesn't really do it, but it's a start.
Yeah.
And then Housing First is coming in with some funding to help the project. So what's really interesting, to Tim's point, is that before we finished, like, trying to figure it out, it launches this month. Before it launched, we already got funding to support the project from other entities, which is kind of great because they were all buying into the process, so it's not just the hospital and it's not just the health department.
The other thing to keep in mind, though, is this is a new project in Norwalk. So in Middlesex, Connecticut, Middlesex section, it's up in mid-state, they've done it and they've been able to demonstrate, I think, $100,000 savings to the hospital the first year. But we don't know that yet in Norwalk. So, you know, Mary
they
doesn't know this.
They demonstrated $600,000
okay.
savings. We're hoping for five.
So Mary's not aware of this part of the strategy yet. But after year one, when Norwalk saves $1 million, gee, then we come back to them. But
right.
So I think we really have to prove the point first and then go down that road. But, you know, the whole idea of hospital funding housing, all that, I don't really buy that too much. I think, you know.
But a lot of hospitals do.
Yeah.
A lot of hospitals are there.
Tax-based, what is the hospital?
It's nonprofit. In Connecticut, they're all nonprofit hospitals.
Our hospital leases essentially the property for $1 a year. It's a one hospital.
Okay.
So part of what we discuss is how do you give those dollars back to the community that obviously you're not paying taxes.
Right.
We have a whole, so we already have a whole community benefit. We give an enormous, we have an enormous community benefit.
Uncompensated care.
Uncompensated care, Tons of charity care, tons of uncompensated care, and tons of community benefit.
You have a proactive media strategy while you're doing this project?
No, again, we chose not to do this as a marketing. If there's going to
no,
be
I don't mean this as a marketing. Yeah. Because you're doing it, is a joint community health assessment and effort towards the community health improvement plan.
Yes.
Is the community engaged, at least in an information level of your processes?
We get coverage. At certain points in the process, we will pull in the press and get the word out there.
But we stink at that.
Yeah.
I mean, we just talked about that on the way in. We're like, how come we never did a glossy brochure on our project? Everybody else does a glossy brochure. We're like, because we don't want to spend the money on a glossy brochure. We want to spend the money on the actual project. So we're not good at it.
Well, my thought is, like, I think most people in the community don't appreciate the multiple determinants.
Yeah.
I don't think people understand it.
Yeah.
They don't understand.
And it has a bad name.
Right.
We're talking about health equity.
That's
people
right.
are saying, whoa, the 60s ended a long time ago. What are you talking about?
I know.
And so we got to figure a better way to approach that.
Yeah. We'll get better at it.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a great opportunity.
It sure is.
Talking about them and trying to illuminate the multiple determinants, social determinants.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do a better job at that. We have to talk about that on the way home.
Can't hear you.
Can you speak up?
Sorry. We work for a hospital, and
yeah.
we have to allow me to get community partners and community residents engaged.
Oh, we use that, for sure.
From the, we translate it in, I don't know how many languages, to make sure people know what the priorities. Because a lot of them are frustrated.
We're supposed to be done at 11:30, right? So I think, right?
Well, and
what time?
We have to.
Okay. All right. So the other area of focus, obesity, healthy lifestyles, we talked a lot about this. So the objectives that we set are to increase by 10% the number of children who meet the physical activity guidelines by 2015 and to increase the percent of children and adults who meet national nutrition recommendations by 5% by December of 2015. So a couple of initiatives that are underway. International Walk the School Day. So we approached all the schools in the catchment area, and we wound up with one school willing to participate in this project, which was in Norwalk. We got a lot of press on it, and it's a fairly successful event. It was one day out of 365. But more important than just that one day was to raise the consciousness in people of, kids can walk to school. We've had some projects in the city of Norwalk where we've built some sidewalks where they weren't there so that children can be more encouraged to do this. But it's a process. We realized that year one we had one school participate. We had great coverage in the media of it, so the word got out there. And some of the schools that didn't recognize the importance of it and decided, well, we'll do something within the school. But we're trying to get that into people's minds, you need to be more physically active.
I think the scary part of that statement is it's a media event.
Yep.
Kids walking to school now.
It's that crazy one. Yeah. Go figure.
In most of our burbs, there are there are no sidewalks.
Right.
Parents drive their kids to the end of their driveway to get the bus, and the bus stops at every driveway.
It's insane.
It's a similar project.
Yeah.
You have police, you have walking guards, you have media.
Eight or ten
parents, chaperones.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Another initiative is a story walk program where you actually have laminated pages from a book and you put them along a course. And one of the places we're looking for, ironically, is the old dump in Norwalk, which was a steamy, smoking mess for many, many years. It's now it's called Oyster Shell Park, and it's right on the, it's down by the water. And there are walking trails through that. So that project, it may find a home there.
By the way, that's a great project, Tim, because it just, you get like a page of the book. It's a child's book, and you walk with the family walks, and they read this chapter, and then they talk about it as they go down over there to the next chapter, and they're getting exercise, and they're reading at the same time, and it's really fun, cool way to do things.
It gets people out and active. A healthy restaurant initiative, and we're looking at this as something that will reach into the suburban towns and finally let us penetrate in and get the interest of my counterparts in those towns. When they heard restaurants, they kind of perked up. So, healthy menu items. Interesting, keep in mind that the National Restaurant Association tracks everything to do with selling food. 49 cents of every dollar people spend on food is spent in a retail food establishment. So people are eating out a lot, like 50%. And so we're looking at some models. We don't want to recreate the wheel here, but models that have worked in other places, and I think we're kind of zeroing in on one that the National Restaurant Association put together. So we're probably launching that within the next few months. And I'm looking at Megan DiMeglio, who works with us, and she's on top of all this much more than I. Our Get Healthy Connecticut is a project we're looking at with the other hospitals, right?
Yeah.
So there have been health assessments done in numerous communities in Connecticut, and just up the road from us in the greater Bridgeport area, there was a health assessment done by Bridgeport Hospital and St. Vincent's and the health departments there. Bridgeport is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Yale network, and they would like to own the state of Connecticut. So they're extending to New Haven. So now we have from New Haven to Greenwich, the coastline in Connecticut, and we're looking at how do we interact with those folks. They've done some things with web pages, and we may be buying in and trying to take this initiative out. And I think the days we're running little programs in each community are numbered. We really need to get a more like a global bang for our dollar, and I definitely think it's possible, especially using technology. We talked about Project Lean. Fit Kids is another activity that we at the health department get involved with, after-school programs where we talk to children about physical activity, nutrition. We partner with Sagard Heart University and Norwalk Community College, where they have exercise science programs, and bring those students in to work with the children. And amazingly, they connect a lot better than people like us. And it's been pretty successful.
So, we put together this sort of hierarchy to look over our work, which we'll show you in a minute. But one of the things we wanted to just make you aware of is that as we've gone through this project, and I think we were pretty progressive and we had a good relationship, so we worked well together. There were a couple of other communities in Connecticut which worked that way also. And remember, Connecticut is the size of like one county in Texas, but it's got all these little municipalities. What happened was we started talking about this at our Connecticut Hospital Association, and these guys were talking about it at the Connecticut Health Department. So we got our Connecticut Health Department together with the Connecticut Hospital Association, and those of us representing the health departments and the hospitals started talking about this, and now we've got the state, and maybe it works because it's a small state, but I can only imagine you guys could impact this too. But the state, the Connecticut Hospital Association now has taken all of the data that all of us were collecting and those data sources and has standardized it for us. So we just got our report, as did all the other hospitals in Connecticut, of all the data that we were looking for collectively and how it impacts our hospital. So between the Connecticut Health Department and the Connecticut Hospital Association, they're going to help do the data collection that we all need to do for FAB or for the IRS. So our roles ultimately, some of us in the hospitals are thinking, our roles ultimately will be to get the qualitative part of that, because they're going to get the numbers for us going forward, because they now have access to all of this because we've been pushing for that to happen. The other thing that we did was collectively, we put together a manual for how to do a community health assessment and how to move forward in a community health improvement plan. So we have in the state of Connecticut, and we can send it to you guys, for anybody who wants it. We have a manual for how to do this, what kind of data to look for, where to go, what questions to ask. It is very comprehensive, and, you know, it's out there for anybody who would like it. It's on the Connecticut Hospital Association website. It's on the CADH website. And if you ask, we'll make sure that we get copies of it to you.
But monitoring the work in Norwalk. So, and we looked at this and said, okay, so we did a health assessment. We have a great health improvement plan. We've brought in our community partners. Now, who appointed us boss to tell them how to make this thing happen? And the hospital has to report on progress to satisfy the IRS. So they established a community health committee at the hospital. And, the slide didn't come in so good.
Oh, can you guys see this?
Yeah. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's community health committee at the hospital, and we expanded that. So it became a kind of a joint venture of the Board of Health and the Board of Trustees at Norwalk Hospital, appointed a community health committee. It includes members from the hospital, from the health department, and from the community. We keep expanding it. And their job is to kind of oversee these two initiatives that are going on in the community.
Their job, their core job really is to make sure that we stay on track and do our community health assessments when we're supposed to, and we fulfill all the aspects of the community health improvement plan. So we meet the IRS guidelines. But that committee, that is board members from the health department, board members from the hospital, and community members, oversees the work that this group does, which is the CHA and the CHIP, and the two initiative groups that came out of the community health assessment. And we talked about the community care team and the resource guide and
these are the
all
obesity
the other
projects.
Yeah, obesity projects. Somebody just had a question.
I was just trying to the community health committee, so you said that's made up of your board and then some other stakeholders.
Yes.
And they're really making sure you meet the guidelines and maybe improving the budget that they're going to put forward for that
rank.
How
yep.
frequently do they meet?
Usually monthly.
They were meeting monthly as we were going through this, you know, originally.
Right.
Or actually, we put it in place about halfway through the assessment part of the project. And they were meeting monthly. Over the summer, I would say every other month. And probably going forward, it'll be more like quarterly.
And then the community health task force, are some of the people on the community health committee on the task force, or?
Some are, and then others are people that are involved in these work groups moving forward.
Right. So, for example, the co-chairs of the mental health and substance abuse initiatives are, one is the chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the hospital. One is...
she's a vice president of a social service agency in Norwalk.
Yeah. They both sit on the community health committee with the board members of our respective organizations and some others. They're also on the community health task force, which pretty much Tim and I co-chair.
Right.
And the obesity and healthy lifestyle initiatives has one person
from the health department,
the health
and
department.
Another person from the Wilton Y chairing the work groups there.
The community health task force helps make sure there's consistency between the two initiatives and all the work groups.
Right.
The Community Health Committee does a lot of that. I think in
this group, like the Department of Psychiatry chair, really has no interest in the obesity thing. And the obesity chairs really, you know, they're completely different groups. They are part of this, which is the larger group, that, you know, 200 people involved in this now. So they would provide feedback, you know, would help get people to participate in focus groups if we needed it. This is the broader community group. That's
then,
the higher level group.
And then members of this group participate in these work groups.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I just talked about.
Yep. That's it.